Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have bad, good, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, in that order, and you'll see why in just a moment. We also want to let you know that today we're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Right now, listeners to the Three Martini Lunch can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. All you have to do is go to ZipRecruiter.com/martini. And Jim, we talked about yesterday how the instinct to politicize horrific events like the Las Vegas shooting seems to happen in real time nowadays, and it certainly was no different yesterday. We talked about Hillary Clinton. And then last night, almost without fail, I didn't see anything by Jimmy Fallon, but he did briefly address the Las Vegas shooting. All the other late night hosts not only talked about their deep sadness, their concerns, and how horrific the event was, but they turned it into a pitch and a demand for gun control legislation. Starting here with Las Vegas native Jimmy Kimmel.
They should be praying. They should be praying for God to forgive them for letting the gun lobby run this country, because it is it's so crazy. Right now, there are loopholes in the law that let people avoid background checks if they buy a gun privately from another party, if they buy a gun online or at a gun show. So I want to show you something. These are the faces of the senators who, days after the shooting in Orlando, voted against a bill that would have closed those loopholes.
Stephen Colbert told us what cowardice and courage is.
That Congress can be heroes by doing literally anything. Universal background checks, or come up with a better answer. Enforce Obama's executive order that denied mentally ill gun purchases, or a better answer. Reinstate the assault weapons ban, or come up with a better answer. Anything but nothing. Doing nothing is cowardice. Doing something will take courage.
Conan O'Brien was a little more vague.
We're all tired of hearing reporters, let alone comics, discuss mass carnage in the most affluent and influential country in the history of the world. Something needs to change. It really does.
Seth Meyer says nothing will change.
When you say, which you always say, now is not the time to talk about it, what you really mean is there is never a time to talk about it. And it would be so much more honest if you would just admit that your plan is to never talk about it and never take any action.
And even James Corden, who's not an American, says America's got it all wrong on guns.
I heard today a commentator on the news explaining that there's no real way to prevent lone wolf mass shootings like this. And forgive me, as I'm just a foreigner here, and some of you may feel I have no place to say this, but how does every other developed country do a better job at preventing these attacks?
Jim, as we mentioned yesterday, a lot of people grappling for answers, but this is certainly the way that those who gravitate to the left do it. Jimmy Kimmel basically demonizing the people who defend the Second Amendment. Stephen Colbert with the "we have to do something" approach. What do you make of it all?
You know, Greg, what are the odds that Jimmy Kimmel would not only be an expert in federal health care policy, but that he would also know all there is to know about gun control policy? It's really amazing. It's amazing. I would have thought these guys were comedians, and that the point of their show was to be to make people laugh, give them entertainment at the end of a long day. But no. They're here to enlighten us and tell us what to think and how to vote and things like that. I liked it better when late night comedy shows were comedy shows instead of basically adjunct wings of the Democratic National Committee. So just where to begin with all that stuff? I mean, the first one that stands out to me, and I'm writing a short item on this for National Review, the gun show loophole gets trotted out after every single mass shooting, despite the fact that no mass shooter has ever gotten their guns from gun show. And it's as inane as Hillary Clinton insisting that the issue we should be focusing on after yesterday is silencers, when the guy didn't use a silencer. Right? If people were buying guns at gun shows and then going out and committing these atrocities, then I would say you have a fair point there. This is something unregulated. By the way, if you sell a gun to someone who has a criminal record or who has a mental impairment or something like that, you can be charged, right? That's actually against the law. It's not that there's no law against this. It simply is that if the person does not have that, you do not have to operate that. Guns that are purchased at gun shows are an exceptionally small amount of all the gun purchases in every year. It is not how criminals really get their guns. It is not what happened in Tucson. It is not what happened in Virginia Tech. It is not what happened in any of these. Almost every one of these shooters managed to pass a background check with flying colors. Nothing, no objections. There was a case where Dylan Roof, the shooter down in Charleston, did not. Unfortunately, the FBI and local law enforcement messed that up. That basically he had a conviction, a felony conviction. He was not supposed to be able to purchase it. The FBI could not verify it because they'd written down the wrong police department, and he was allowed to purchase the gun. No law can overcome human error, which is something worth keeping in mind here. And the second thing is that the Sandy Hook shooter stole his guns. You know, stealing is against the law too, right? These people are basically grasping around looking for any possible explanation they can. And they basically just decided the problem is lawmakers. By golly, it's your fault, Congress, that something like this happened. I think it's kind of insufferable. I think it is. There's a great deal of smugness and arrogance and things like that. That basically these people believe that the easiest way to deal with something like this is to restrict the rights of law-abiding citizens. And it really grinds the teeth on something like this. So anyway, that's where we are. But the good news is our president's not going to listen to it. Right, Greg?
No, but I do have one quick follow-up because you did an excellent job of explaining why they're off base there on the loophole. And then, of course, we've talked about why attaching that to the no-fly list could potentially raise some due process issues. And then the mentally ill legislation, that had a lot to do with veterans who at some point got diagnosed with post-traumatic stress and so forth. It takes a lot longer to explain why the bullet point headline is not exactly accurate. And so on the PR front, it's a little bit challenging for those who want to defend the Second Amendment.
Well, I was going to say, if you want to change gun laws, is it too much to ask that you look at what they are?
Right.
I mean, people honestly are going to say, why are we banning machine guns? Machine guns are banned. Why didn't we do a background check on this guy? As far as we know, he passed his background checks, at least according to law enforcement, what we know now. Whenever they, should there be universal background checks? And all these polls are very well. One, people don't realize the extent of background checks as is. And two, they just kind of believe that there's got to be some way that these mass shooters are getting their guns illegally. Unfortunately, mass shooters are not people who have lengthy criminal records. This guy, at least as far as we know so far, does not have a criminal record that would have prevented him from owning a firearm. Unfortunately, the mass shooter is very different from the typical gun crime. And also when you've seen numbers get thrown around about how there are hundreds of mass shootings in America every year. Well, that counts any shooting in which four people are shot, which very easily an effort to rob a liquor store or a 7-Eleven or something like that can turn into a mass shooting. If two gangs get into a fight somewhere with guns, two gang members shooting each other and four people being wounded, gets treated the same as something like what happened in Las Vegas last night. And I think most people would say that's a different problem than that. When we talk about the sheer number of murders in this country, look, the vast majority of murders in this country are gang related in inner cities like Chicago and things like that, just by the sheer numbers. Doesn't mean that not every murder is a tragedy. Doesn't mean we shouldn't investigate and prosecute every single one of them. But if you want to talk about actual gun violence in this country, you have to talk much more about gangs and circumstances like that and recognize that mass shootings like what we saw in Las Vegas and Orlando and Sandy Hook and Tucson are not, in fact, representative of gun crime in this country.
All right, let's move on to our second martini now, our good martini. And my apologies to you, Jim, for trampling all over your wonderful transition a moment ago. This is from Axios. President Trump may say he's a defender of gun ownership rights, but with all the gun control pressure he'll be under after Las Vegas, how do we know he'll resist it, especially after the debt limit deal with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi and his flirtation with the deal on DACA? Bottom line, Trump's allies, both inside and out of the White House, are mostly sure he'll resist because he owes too much to the NRA and its supporters, but even some of them aren't 100% sure. They do quote a couple of different advisors to Trump. One is Roger Stone, who says the base would go insane, and he knows it. Steve Bannon said it's impossible that Trump would wilt on the gun issue, saying it would be the end of everything. He said it would actually be worse than if Trump wilted on immigration. The reasons that Trump will probably not change on this issue, according to Axios, he feels closer to the NRA than just about any outside group. He believes his unnuanced support for the Second Amendment was crucial to his victory, and he's been instinctively allergic to Democrats who argue for gun control in the immediate aftermath of mass shooting. So, Jim, you can tell the way this is structured, and we hear this a lot when it comes to the gun issue, that Republicans just feel loyal to the gun lobby. It's not because they feel it on principle, which is what is often.
This constant reference to the idea that the NRA is powerful because it donates money. Actually, if you look at the sheer amount of dollars donated, the NRA pales in comparison to labor unions, to trial lawyers, to a whole bunch of, you know, not only, you know, large left of center interest groups. The reason politicians fear, and people can't see that I'm making air quotes as I say this, the reason politicians fear the NRA is because the NRA has a large number of members who are extremely motivated on their issue. That if, you know, if the NRA sends out a flyer saying Congressman X wants to take away your guns, Congressman X wants to restrict your right to buy a gun, NRA members will go out and vote against Congressman X, and it's really good news for Challenger Y. Now, there, you might poll a district to find a lot of people who say they support gun control, particularly the more generically you describe it, the more vague your terms are, the more people like it. But that support is about an inch deep, whereas for NRA members, it's about a mile deep. That's what actually does it. So two things worth noting here. There is some reason for gun owners and Second Amendment advocates to sweat a little bit here. Back in 2000, Trump wrote a book, or may have had a ghostwritten book, that said, "The America We Deserve," in which he criticized Democrats who argue for total gun confiscation, but he also criticized Republicans who, quote, walk the NRA line, unquote. And he says, the Republicans walk the NRA line and refuse even limited restrictions. And then he goes on to say, I generally oppose gun control, but I support the ban on assault weapons and I support a slightly longer waiting period to purchase a gun. With today's internet technology, we should be able to tell within 72 hours if a potential gun owner has a record. Actually, that's pretty much where we are right now. That is a pretty good way of describing what is in effect, other than for a couple of unusual circumstances where the delay could take longer. So could Trump go back to that? Could Trump start making sounds like that? Well, I don't think he would do that. If he did, it would be probably some of the most painful egg on the face for the National Rifle Association of all time, because in 2016, not only did they endorse him, they endorsed him earlier than they'd endorsed any presidential candidate before. They brought him to the convention. They gave him the endorsement at the convention. Trump seemed to bask in it. I was there with Charlie Cook and a couple of, you know, neither one of us really big fans of Trump, and kind of pointed out these past deviations from this. But the NRA was willing to make a leap of faith. And by and large, Trump has kept up his end of the bargain. Now we're going to see Trump tested. At this point, there's no indication of that. The comments from Bannon are really intriguing and kind of indicate, yeah, if Trump were suddenly to say, yeah, I support this particular, I'm going to allow this kind of form of gun control, I'm going to urge Congress to pass it, man, you would see people turning on him fast. And unfortunately, look, this would not be the first time someone, you know, thought they had an agreement with Donald Trump and found out Trump saw that agreement differently.
Well, what may keep him in line here is the Democrats don't seem to all be singing from the same song sheet either, because you've got people like Jimmy Kimmel and other politicians. They love the word common sense when it comes to gun legislation, but they'll talk about reinstating what they call the assault weapons ban and universal background checks and so forth. And then you've got the New Republic yesterday saying it's time to get rid of guns. Yes, all of them. So they're clearly not on the same page either, and that makes it easier for Trump.
Go for it. Please make that the Democratic platform for 2018, 2020, and beyond.
All right. Do you need to hire a new late-night talk show host? Because if you do, I know where you can get some help. If you're hiring, you know that quality hires keep your business moving forward, but you also know it can take a lot of time to find the right candidate for the job. Do you really want to have to bring all these people through your office or even just sift through all the resumes? Because with ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. So you can rest easy knowing your job is being seen by the right candidates. Then ZipRecruiter puts its smart matching technology to work, actively notifying qualified candidates about your job within minutes of posting. So then you receive the best possible matches.
That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other hiring sites, ZipRecruiter does not depend on the right candidates finding you, it finds them. You can even get a head start on the interview process by adding screening questions to your job post to help identify the most qualified candidates, so you don't have to waste time sorting through a stack of resumes to find the perfect fit. No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. And the easy-to-use ZipRecruiter dashboard lets you manage your hiring process from start to finish all in one place. ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire.
Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by growing businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, listeners to 3 Martini Lunch can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. Yes, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/martini. That's ZipRecruiter.com/martini. One more time to try it for free. You've got nothing to lose. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/martini. All right, Jim. One of the hires that Donald Trump made prior to becoming president of the United States during the transition was naming South Carolina Congressman Mick Mulvaney to be his budget director. He was subsequently confirmed, and he is now, of course, a key player when it comes to shepherding tax reform and, of course, putting the specifics into this bill. During his time in Congress and as a member of the House Freedom Caucus, Mulvaney, of course, was a deficit hawk and very, very critical of the Obama administration for running up, and rightly so, those massive deficits that essentially doubled the national debt over 8 years. But now there's a lot of controversy over different parts of the framework of the Trump tax reform plan specifically. And Jim, I know you've written about this for the Morning Jolt, whether or not to remove the deduction for folks for what they pay in their state and local income taxes, because that really could have an impact on whether folks actually get a net tax cut. So White House Budget Director Mick Mulvaney is signaling flexibility on this issue, saying on CNN Sunday that decisions about deductions remain up in the air as the bill is not finished yet. He then took it a step further by adding that a tax plan that doesn't add to the deficit won't spur growth. Quote, "I've been very candid about this. We need to have new deficits because of that. We need to have the growth. If we simply look at this as being deficit neutral, you're never going to get the type of tax reform and tax reductions that you need to get to sustain 3% economic growth." And then hot air takes it from there, saying, "Besides the obvious conflict with Donald Trump's campaign rhetoric on deficits and national debt, this presents another problem for Republicans. They want to use a reconciliation vehicle for tax reform, which would allow them to pass a bill with only 50 votes in the Senate. But if their bill creates new deficits, it will have to go through regular order and get 60 votes. The chances of that happening approach nil, with Democrats already pouncing on the proposal as a wet kiss to the wealthy at the expense of the middle class." So, Jim, you'll hear a lot of folks like Larry Kudlow out there saying growth is going to make this positive in the long run and possibly the short run. And yes, there'll be deficits in the short term. Other folks, of course, are looking at this and saying, every time there's a Democrat in the White House, we are deficit hawks. And then when our guy gets in there, we don't care anymore.
That feels like fair criticism, doesn't it, Greg?
Yes.
I mean, Mulvaney, most of all. I mean, like, this was a guy who was, you know, willing to talk about defense cuts, who really was, look, you know, was willing to toe the hard line and, you know, made enemies with John McCain over it. And who was, you know, and look, this is not the easy argument to make, because everybody likes spending money. We like spending money on defense. We like spending money on entitlements. We like spending money on infrastructure, all kinds of good stuff. Somebody has to be the who's called the green eye shade Republican. Somebody has to be the fiscal hawk. Somebody has to be the one making the point, look, we don't have this money. We cannot keep borrowing it. We are just adding to the debt. We have, you know, and all of a sudden, all it took was working through the Trump administration, where, like, you could almost see Mick Mulvaney turning into a pod person. It looks like Mick Mulvaney. It sounds like Mick Mulvaney. But all of us who know Mick Mulvaney know that's not Mick Mulvaney. The Mick Mulvaney we know would never do something like that. Or at least it wouldn't, you know, because, like, deficits. We need a little more deficit. Now, look, granted, this is the Republicans are basically, the reason they're having such enormous difficulty governing in the Trump administration is cannot all be laid at the feet of the president. See, look, I just said something nice about him. Basically, Republicans have been promising a lot for a really long time and not really thinking through how they make the numbers work. Kind of saw this in the debate about repealing and replacing Obamacare, where people wanted it completely and totally repealed every last period, except the parts we like. Wait a second. Whoa. We want to keep people on their parents' plans till 26. And we, you know, people who have had expansion of Medicaid, a whole bunch of Republicans like, wait a second. We don't want to throw people off of Medicaid. What we're seeing here, you know, the call for the getting rid of the deduction for state and local taxes. Look, I'm hearing from a bunch of Republicans, conservatives who say, Jim, New York and New Jersey never vote for us. This is, we, you know, low tax states have been effectively subsidizing high tax states. If you're a Republican or you want lower taxes, you got to move out of New York. You got to move out of New Jersey, or you just got to fight harder for them. Right. Because, you know, Republicans in New York and New Jersey aren't fighting hard enough for lower taxes. That might be the only Republican, you know, concept that they still unify around. They keep, you know, making this argument. I thought part of the point of cutting taxes was you wanted to put more money in everybody's pocket so they would then go out and spend it, and thus would stimulate the economy, and everybody would be doing better. There'd be more hiring, more jobs, expansion, all kinds of good stuff would come out of that. If you give people a tax cut on the cutting of the rates, but then you take it back by eliminating a deduction, you either end up with a net, you know, very little net change, right? You're taking away with one hand and you're giving it with the other, or you end up with a much smaller tax cut than you would ordinarily get with cutting the rates. So the one way Republicans have to pay for this is eliminating the deduction and thus raising the taxes for all taxpayers in certain states. And Republicans want to have a nice, big, substantial tax cut, something people are really going to be able to feel. Somebody ran the numbers for if you were making, I think it was around $19,000, if you're on the lower end, that basically under the Republican plan, over the course of a year, you save $6.50. I know it's considered uncouth to scoff at the size of certain tax cuts, but I think people, when people vote for Republicans, they're expecting more than, you know, if you're lucky, two small coffees at Starbucks. And if you want an economic impact, you need to have a much bigger, much more tangible one. Unfortunately, you got to figure out how you're going to make up for that funding, since you were counting on that tax money coming in future cycles. So the Mulvaney response is pretty clear. We're just going to stop worrying about deficits, which, look, maybe economically that can pay off in the long run. But it's a very dramatic change from what we were saying for the past 8 years, Greg.
No doubt about that. So we were promised more details. We'll see if they address this and what they have to say about that deduction as well. I have a feeling there's some internal debate about that. That's pretty intense right now. So we'll see what they come up with. So, Jim, until then, talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Don't forget to visit our friends at ZipRecruiter. And remember, you can post jobs for free right now on ZipRecruiter, ZipRecruiter.com/martini. And tune in again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.